ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Puranjana becomes a woman in the next life, text number 34. Hitva grihan sutan bhogan vaidarbhi madirekshana anvadhavata pandeshyam. Jyotsneva Rajanikaram Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan Vaidarbhi Madirekshana Anvadhavata Pandeshyam. Jyotsneva Rajanikaram Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan Vaidarbhi Madirekshana Anvadhavata Pandyesham. Jyotsneva Rajanikaram. Ladies, please. Hitva, giving up. Gruhan, home. Sutan, children. Bhogan, material happiness. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of King Vidarbha. Madira ikshana, with enchanting eyes. Anvadhavata, followed. Pandya Isham, King Malayadhvaja. Jyotsna Iva, like the moonshine. Rajanikaram, the moon. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as the moonshine follows the moon, immediately after King Malayadhvaja departed for Kulachala, his devoted wife, whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homely happiness despite family and children. Purport. Just as in the Vanaprastha stage, the wife follows the husband, similarly, when the spiritual master retires for Nirjana Bhajana, some of his advanced devotees follow him and engage in his personal service. In other words, those who are very fond of family life should come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by society, friendship and love. A verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Guru Ashtaka is significant in this regard. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadah. A disciple should always remember that by serving the spiritual master, he can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. All the scriptures recommend that it is by pleasing the spiritual master and serving him directly that one can attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service. The word madirekshana is also significant in this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained in his Sandarbha that the word madira means intoxicating. If one's eyes become intoxicated upon seeing the deity, he may be called madirekshana. Queen Vaidarbhi's eyes were very enchanting. Just as one's eyes are madirekshana when engaged in seeing the temple deity, unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakhaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturu Yashcha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'm sorry, I'm giving class today. Usually my turn is on Thursday and Gokulananda Prabhu's is on Wednesday. But we've switched. So I'm not mentally prepared, nor am sort of the past few days that we've been out to Gita Nagari. I know the storyline, but I'm not sort of tuned in. So please forgive me ahead of time. Some things to remember. This is Vaidarbhi, is King Puranjana, who's been born again as Vaidarbhi, the daughter of the king of Vidarbha. And he marries the king of Pandya. His name is Malayadhvaja. And together they have executed the activities of family devotional life, and now is the time to take on or intensify their devotional service. And so King Malayadhvaja, he departed for a place called Kulachala. And when he left, his wife Vaidarbhi also followed. So that's the principle. Now that's a story. The principle that in that relationship of chastity, Vaidarbhi left or followed King Malayadhvaja into the forest, voluntarily giving up the comforts of home, family and other facilities. The second part is Madira Ikshana, that is the eyes being enchanted by seeing the deity of the temple. Madira means intoxicating. So what is intoxicating to the eyes is the object that it gazes upon. And that object is Krishna, the form of Krishna. So there's a very wonderful pastime in the life of Sri Ramanujacharya. And that's what's coming to me now. And the third is, today is the disappearance day of Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana. So we will try to connect one of the significant aspects of his life into this purport. First of all, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is also described here. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Baladeva Vidyabhushana are naturally connected. They have a guru-disciple relationship. So we'll try to put all this together. So just as the moonshine follows the moon at night, Jyotsneva Rajanikaram. It means that the moonshine is not ever or never separated from the moon. The moonshine is the energy of the moon, and as the moonshine moves along. So that is the connection between a devoted, or the relationship between a husband and wife in this case. And Prabhupada's taking it to a relationship between a guru and a disciple. That as the guru moves, the disciple moves. Or said differently, as the guru would like to move the disciple moves. So Prabhupada's giving us, in the Vanaprastha stage, as the husband moves into the forest, the wife follows, voluntarily giving up the comforts of home, all the facilities of family, and you know, serving each other, laughing with each other, cooking for each other, eating with each other, the comforts of a nice, the house, the secure feelings, my facility, my space, my things, our things, all of that is voluntarily given up. And there is only one purpose. The purpose is to fully dedicate oneself to the process of devotional service, to intensify one's relationship with Krishna, and two, feel a stronger sense of direct dependence on Krishna. Because in the grihastha life, although one is actually fully dependent on Krishna, the sense of that dependence is not complete. Because one thinks, I am working, I'm going to the office, or I'm having some income, and somehow my income is dependent on my job, and my job is dependent on how I perform, and what kind of interactions I have with the colleagues and my boss. And if I do well, my boss will pay me well, I'll get a raise, I'll progress in life, and I progress in life, then I can buy things that I can worship the deity with, etc. So it's not clear that regardless of the layers in between, Krishna is still the actual boss. So the tendency to perform, even if it is nishkama tendency, that is not fruitive, I should not say fruitive, still it is not necessarily bhakti. There is a high tendency that it can be karma yoga. Karma yoga, because I'm still doing things that I like. I like this job, I like this line of work. And within that nishkama karma yoga pitfall is another danger, that there is a sense of proprietorship on that money. This is my money. I pay so much for this, I pay so much for this. I give so much charity and donation to Krishna's temple once in a while for this festival, for this situation. But this is, I decide how my money is going, After all, I'm earning it. And yeah, I want to give in charity. And I thank Krishna because, you know, the economic situation is not good. Somehow my job is still there. I thank Krishna that my boss is not too upset with me. This is all still within the jurisdiction of Karma Yoga. It is purifying, but it is not the fire of pure bhakti. So when one comes to the Vanaprastha stage, one understands, now's the time to intensify the fire of devotional service. Ideally it's nice, even before that, that one can perform bhakti yoga. That is, that the activities are performed with full understanding that this is service unto Krishna. And Krishna can change that service any moment he likes, and that's fine. But right now I'm engaging in this kind of work, whatever that work is simply for my purification. Krishna can call me to his service any moment, and I'm ready to drop it. I'm ready to drop this because my attachment is not to this work or that work, my attachment is to Guru and Krishna. So Vanaprastha stage is like a voluntary, not I like it, is a voluntary stage where one gives up the tendency or the possibilities of performing even Nishkama Karma Yoga. And one goes to the forest, physically moves away from the comforts of home and all the babble of grandchildren and all the problems of, you know, family life and this property issue, that issue, construction of a new house, all of that is kept aside. That is not a concern anymore. So it requires like a severe detachment. And, by the way, if that detachment is not cultivated during the grihastha life, then when the Vanaprastha stage arrives, that detachment becomes impossible. At best, difficult. And the difficulty is that one of the symptoms of that difficulty is one doesn't get a clear sense of when is the right time to do it. Few more years, maybe then. Few more years, maybe then. Just let my whatever son graduate, then maybe. Let my son get married, maybe then. Grandchild is very young, right? Now it's the time. The Kailash story, it repeats. So when there is lack of clarity as to when is the right time. Therefore in the previous ages, the demarcations of the phases of life were according to age. That way there was no argument. At 50 you move on. At 25, if you decide to get married, that's the time to get married. Till 50 you work on it. At 50, move on. Assuming that they live till 100. So they had 50 more years to cultivate full Krishna consciousness. Now people don't live till 100. People don't live till 80. Things change. So one is very efficient at putting the first 25, 50 years in place, and then the rest will say, well, I don't know. Krishna cut out the back half of my life. It's not my fault. That's not how it is. So in 100% of life, 50% is used for exclusive pursuit of Krishna consciousness. And it's nice that it's the back half. There is a reason, because in the first half, one is too disturbed, distracted, immature. Although ideally, one track is 100% of one's life is devoted to exclusive Krishna consciousness. If not, then at least 50%. And in that 50%, the wife is also given that opportunity that she can go with the husband, follow the husband into the forest. The other day we were talking to someone, I forget who, some children I think, and we were saying nowadays people don't get into Vanaprastha because there are no forests. So where will they go? They have forest preserves. But forest preserves are not places of cultivating exclusive dependence on Krishna. The forest life means one lives according to what is can naturally be gathered. Simple. One of the things in vanaprastha life is no cooking actually. But even if they cook with the bare minimum. It's not like the supermarkets and all the varieties of spices and herbs, and today I will have something with, you know, basil, tomorrow is the oreganos, and it's the thyme, and today is the rosemary. All that's not there. It's all dry leaves and whatever is available. Simple. Roots and berries and fruits and things like that. All right. Nowadays, that may not be realistic to follow, but the idea is that it's very simple. Very, very simplified lifestyle. So Prabhupada takes our attention not just from a wife and husband, not into a wife and husband dynamic, but actually into a spiritual master-disciple dynamic. Because the relationship in one sense is similar, that there is, it's a relationship of chastity, or said differently, it's a relationship where the disciple's perfection is to move according to the will of the spiritual master. That's the perfection. It cannot be artificially done, because if it's artificially done now, with some passage of time, the mind will cause all sorts of difficulty. Why did you follow that? Why did he instruct you like that? Or you shouldn't have followed that at that time. Something, whatever ways that it manifests. So it's progressively cultivated, but the perfection of a disciple's life is to move according to the will of the Guru. And the Guru has only one will. May my disciple fully realize Krishna. So anything that the Guru does to help a disciple has that one purpose behind it. There is no other purpose. So here Prabhupada talks about a very nice statement. In other words, those who are very fond of family life should come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by society, friendship and love. The call to action for a disciple is to voluntarily step out of the comfort zone and take on whatever is that we'll call it difficulty for now. It's actually called tapasya, but we'll call it difficulty. Take on that difficulty simply to render service to Guru. Generally, what's the phenomenon is, a person serves Guru or Krishna once he or she is comfortable. Then they think of, how can I serve Krishna now that everything else has been taken care of. My family situation is taken care of, financial situation is taken care of, my engagements are taken care of. Yes, I'm happy to do some service. And if something goes beyond that, right now I cannot. This service, I cannot, because look at all the things. So Prabhupada is talking that one should work on oneself to take on without worrying about how Krishna will take care. Krishna will definitely take care. One should step outside of that comfort zone. And said differently, take a little risk. It's perfectly all right to take a risk. Generally the word risk I don't like to use, because within the word risk is the idea that anything can happen. Right? Risk by definition means that the outcome is uncertain. It can be a gain or it can be a loss. That's the word risk means. But in Krishna consciousness you really cannot apply that word. Because once there is nothing called risk, because Krishna never fails. The word is Achyuta. Krishna is described as Achyuta. That means there is no danger that Krishna will fail. Just recently, in this past weekend in Gita Nagari, we were hearing that there is this word or phrase called hedging. One hedges one's bets. It's a finance term that basically means this. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. That word actually has come from the investment field. Because you have stocks, and each stock has its particular volatility. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. Very rarely does it always. But in general, with the trend of time, stocks generally go up. That's why people invest. So if you have $100, anybody with pigeon brain will tell you not to put all the $100 into one stock. Because if the stock moves down, all your wealth goes down. That's a lot of what they call volatility. So they say, take your $100 and distribute it. Put 10 here, 20 there, 30 somewhere else. Distributed such a way that your 100 is in different places. So even if one stock moves up or down, more worry is the down part, that your losses are not too high. This is called hedging. Put your eggs in different baskets so that your risk is minimized. In Krishna consciousness, that's a terrible idea. It is also called secularism. Because Krishna doesn't fail, the idea is put all your eggs in the Krishna basket. In fact, this is the real investment intelligence. Everywhere else, the wealth has to be distributed because you don't know how these stocks will perform. But we have experience, the experience of our acharyas, the experience of all the sadhus and scripture gives us full indication that it does make complete intelligence to put all our eggs in one basket called the Krishna basket. Until our intelligence is completely purified, we still put our eggs in different baskets. We bring the same phenomena from the material world into the spiritual frame of life. Just in case. Who knows? Although they call him Achyuta, let's look at the life of so many devotees. Krishna has not been Achyuta in their case. Look at that devotee. So many years that devotee did something. Look at where he is now. Look at that devotee. She did so much service. Where is she now? Krishna has not shown up. So I should also make sure. People have these doubts. So I want to make sure that in case something goes wrong, versus who knows, today is this temple president, tomorrow it may be that GVC, things can change. And by the way, they can change. And if they do change, what will happen to me? What if Krishna doesn't, show up? Because after all, this is an institution, and, the heads can change, and something will happen. I'm not so sure. This is not how bhakti works. And it's not how bhakti should work either. It's a material vision of pure bhakti. Of course, it requires faith. We are not asking, Prabhupada is not asking us to abandon our faith. Prabhupada is asking us to cultivate our faith to such a degree that we move according to the will of Guru and Krishna. What we do today, said differently, how we cultivate our faith today will determine how we will move according to the will of Guru and Krishna tomorrow. So, our faith in Krishna increases or is nurtured by how we nurture our faith today, every day. Then one can move. It cannot be artificially done. It should not be artificially done. But that's the perfection of a disciple's life. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadam. The guru moves according to the will of Krishna and the disciple moves according to the will of guru. Therefore, the disciple moves according to the will of Krishna. And one's life must be cultivated in that direction. Which means one may have to voluntarily give up the comforts that one relies upon. Prabhupada writes, society, friendship and love. Said differently, one looks for all of that in one's relationship with Krishna. I look for my sense of camaraderie in Krishna. I look for my sense of friendship in Krishna. I look for my love, look for love in Krishna. Because only that is true. Regardless of time, regardless of circumstance, and regardless of what body one is in, there is one relationship that is always true. One's relationship with Krishna. It's always true. It is eternal. Anything else can change. So I'm looking for fulfillment in that relationship. And that relationship, we just read recently in Gita Nagari, that relationship is not a one-to-one relationship. It is a one-to-many, because Krishna does not mean Krishna alone. It means Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So the idea that, oh, only exclusively Krishna, I don't care about anyone else, is not a right idea. It's an immature idea. It is Krishna exclusively and everything in relation to Krishna. So there is a reference of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaking about this. And it says, all scriptures recommend that it is by pleasing the spiritual master and serving him directly that one can attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional life. So in the life of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there came a time when in Jaipur, that is where the deities of Madan Mohan and Govindadev were, in fact rather Damodar were also there, and all the Goswami's deities were smuggled out of Vrindavan because the Muslim king, his name was Aurangzeb, he did not like that from his window, when he looked out, he saw the spires of the great temples that Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami had erected. He didn't like it. He said it spoils the view. So he asked for his followers to demolish these temples. By the way, Aurangzeb himself was a very, very, very pious Muslim. He would chant his prayers 5 times a day. He would give charity like anything. He did everything that a Muslim does, you know, a pious Muslim does. And one of the things about Islam is that God cannot have form. And anyone who accepts that God has form cannot be accepted as a Muslim. It is against his dharma. In fact, he is a pious Muslim if he can denigrate it. At least that was the understanding. So he didn't like that all these people were serving Krishna, a form of Krishna. He said, I'll be a good Muslim if I destroy these things. That was his understanding. So he asked all of his soldiers to demolish. So the Madan Mohan temple was broken. The Radha Govindadev temple, which was 7 stories high, is now about 3 stories high, was broken. And all the Vaishnavas became very anxious. And so they smuggled the deities of Krishna in stacks of hay out of Vrindavan. And the king of Jaipur, Raja Jai Singh, said, I will serve the deities, they will be in my palace, and I'll make sure that they're protected. So all the deities came there. So, from Vrindavan, the Jaipur area became like the seat of Vaishnav tradition. Vishwanath Chakravarti, so now move a few decades or a century later, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur had many, many disciples. One of them was Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan. That's a title. His name was Baladev. Vidyabhushana was a title that he was given. Vidyabhushana means one who's decorated by knowledge. So he originally came from Sri Madhvacharya's line. He was perfectly educated in Sri Madhvacharya's teachings. And when he came across and met the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, he was completely enchanted to hear Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he got so attracted that he studied very carefully under Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Gaura Leela, and became an expert in Gaudiya Siddhanta. So at such a time, the Vaishnavas, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, came to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur with a little anxiety in their heart. The anxiety was that in Jaipur area, the Ramanadis, that's one sect of Vaishnavas, they were not accepting the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as bona fide Vaishnavas. And the reason they were not accepting is that the Gaudiya branch did not have commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Their own commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. Every bona fide line must have their commentary on Vedanta Sutras. In fact, Shankaracharya wrote, Ramanujacharya wrote, like that. But they said the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have not had that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not encourage the writing of explanations of the Vedanta Sutra because he said Vyasadeva has already done it. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect explanation of all the Vedanta Sutra. So there is no need to do it. We follow Vyasadeva thoroughly. But they said, no, no, you must have. It's like, we cannot consider you a not-for-profit charitable trust because you don't have 501c3 status. No, no, everything we do is for charity. No, you have to have a 501c3 status. It's like that. So the Vaishnavas invited Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you please write something. You please come and discuss this with all the Vaishnavas of that area. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, I have become very aged now. I cannot travel. And anyway, I don't want to get into at this stage of life. I'm just very old now. So Baladev Vidyabhushana volunteered, if you permit me, I would like to do this service for you. He said, all right, you may go. So when Baladev Vidyabhushana went to the Ramanadis, they had this debate, we cannot accept you as bona fide because you don't have commentary. All right, what should we do? Well, we'd like you to write a commentary. Okay. He said, how can I take on a task like this? This is too big. I'm just one person. No, unless you have a commentary, we cannot accept you as bona fide. Anyway, I'm skipping a lot of details of the story. But he went to Radha Govinda temple, the deity of that was served by Srila Rupa Goswami, and he offered his prostrated obeisances, saying, this is a challenge to entire line that is coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And somehow, I have this service, and I cannot do this service on my own. I cannot do this service on my own. It's very difficult for me. But by your mercy, Srila Govinda Dev, anything can happen. And he was just in that prostrated condition until he got an indication from the deity. The pujari saw him in that condition, and somehow the deity inspired him to give the deity's garland to Baladev Vidyabhushan. And when he got that garland, he took that as an indication that yes, Lord Govinda will help me. So he sat at the Govinda temple and he began writing his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And it is said that Lord Govinda personally dictated to him all the revealed secrets or confidential information contained in the Vedanta Sutra. So he was just a scribe. Ended. And he came with this work. And he offered it to Govinda, called Govinda Bhashya. One of the exercises we did in Gita Nagari is Ramapad Maharaj had some questions put up and he asked us different examples from scripture. So this is not scriptural, but one of the questions was, where are the instances in scripture where the credit was given to the to the right person in the right place in all circumstances? So there were many scriptural examples. In our history, this is one of the other ones. That he named that particular work Govinda Bhashya, means that which is spoken by Govinda. And he did it in such a short time, that when he brought it to the Ramanadis, they were shocked. They said, "Did you download it from somewhere?" He said, No. This is what I have written." And they scrutinizingly looked at it, all the scholars, and they said, "Wow, we haven't seen any work so thorough, so perfect." He said, "It's all Lord Govinda's dictation." And so they have accepted, yes, the Gaudiya line is a perfectly bona fide Vaishnav line. And so Baladev Vidyabhushana is credited with making or establishing the Gaudiya Siddhanta as a thorough, perfect and pure Siddhanta in the neo-modern, I guess, or the modern age of Vaishnava history. So very, very important contribution to our Gaudiya Siddhanta. And that's what is being driven by his guru's teachings, Yasya Prasadad Bhagavat Prasado. That Bhagavat Prasada, Lord Govinda's mercy, descended because he had thoroughly pleased Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur by being a student. One of the best ways of pleasing the guru is by being a very simple student without too much complicated brain. This simplicity is what is the most attractive quality. Simplicity does not mean keep your intelligence at home and the intelligence can go on vacation. But it means that the intelligence is utilized for this one purpose, that I should follow the dictations of my guru. When intelligence can tell us that, that means we are simple-minded. And Baladev Vidyabhushana did that, so Bhagavat Prasada followed. Krishna's mercy always follows the devotee's mercy. Always, always, always. Krishna will not do something if the devotee doesn't desire it. And if the devotee desires it, Krishna will make it happen. That's why it's a saying, once a Vaishnava says, may this happen to you, then even if it was not meant for us, it will happen. Because the devotee has said it. Pure devotee has said it. Let's put it that way. So the empowerment of a pure devotee, we say that everything that is required is within the instruction. And the instruction comes with the entire empowerment necessary to carry out the instruction. So Krishna says that empowerment comes from him. Yoga kshemam vahami aham. Krishna takes the responsibility of carrying the empowerment in the instruction to the surrendered disciple. Then there is the word madira ikshana, that the eyes become intoxicated by seeing the deity of Krishna. That is the right, when we say no intoxication, it is no intoxication due to material substances. But our line is to always be intoxicated. That our goal is to be ever intoxicated. Not through intoxicating substances, but intoxicated in all the senses to be fully intoxicated with Krishna by seeing the deity, by hearing the holy name and the glorification of Krishna, by tasting his prasadam, by touching the deity and serving the deity and serving at the temple, etc., by smelling the flowers offered to Krishna, the incense, etc. We do follow intoxication. In fact, the devotees are meant to be always intoxicated, but with Krishna. So I'm looking at the clock here. The story of Ramanujacharya's life. One time, Sri Ramanujacharya put together a very wonderful festival for Sri Ranganath. And that festival was like a Rath Yatra, like a procession through the city of Sri Rangam. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people had come out. And it's not like a silent protest march or something. It's a very loud, boisterous parade with all the brahmanas reciting mantras from the Vedas, reciting all the works of the Alvars with full, you know, recitation in poetry and meter, with drums and bugles and conches, and the whole city was completely resounding with the glorification of Sri Ranganath. And the procession was happening along Loyola Park, along the beach, the banks of the river Kaveri. So Sri Rangam is an island situated in the middle of the river Kaveri. So they were having this procession along the banks of the river Kaveri. So while this procession was moving this way, there was only two people, one couple, that was moving right across the procession. It was a woman and a man. The woman was walking this way and the man was walking backwards. He had held a beautiful umbrella on her head and was gazing into her eyes. And he was so enchanted by her eyes that night, and she was so enchanted by his doing so that they did not hear. They did not hear nor see the whole hundreds and thousands of Vaishnavas walking across, and they were walking right into them. They didn't even turn their head to say, "What is this noise?" They were oblivious completely. He was just gazing into her very beautiful eyes. So Ramanujacharya from a distance noticed that, and he said, "What an unfortunate set of people. So unfortunate that the Supreme Personality has himself come out and glancing at everyone, but these two are so absorbed in each other, and I wonder what it is. What it is about her that he is so lost." So he sent one of his servants, "Please ask him." So when the servant tapped this man, he didn't respond. So he had to tap him, shake him, face. "Yes, what is it? Why are you disturbing me?" "Our Acharya would like to speak with you." He said, "Ah, what a disturbance." He came in front of Ramanujacharya with respect and said, "How may I serve you?" He said, "I've been noticing you two have been walking like this, thousands of Vaishnavas, all these sounds and gongs and bang, 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 all this is going on and you don't even notice." He said, "Oh, procession, I was lost." "Yes, what were you so lost in?" "I was lost in her charming eyes. They are so captivating. I have not seen anything more beautiful than this pair of eyes." So Ramanujacharya challenged him, "If I show you eyes more beautiful than these two, what will you do?" He said, "I promise you that I will surrender my life to those in the service of those eyes, because there are no such eyes more beautiful than these two." Ramanuja took up the challenge, blindfolded the man and took him straight to Ranganath. It was the time of the Aarti, and Ranganath is this massive deity lying down on Anantaseisha like this, with from his navel, Lord Brahma and all the demigods. In fact, his hand is on Lord Shiva and all the Brihaspati and the sages, all are there. It's a very, very magnificent deity. And the pujari was taking the big blazing lamp and waving it from the feet towards the face. So exactly at the time when the lamp was right at the face of the deity, Ramanujacharya removed the blindfold for this person and told him, gaze into these eyes. And when he saw Ranganath's eyes, he lost it. And he was an honest man, he told Ramanujacharya, you're right. These eyes are the most enchanting. Madira Ikshana. And I'm so intoxicated by these two eyes, I was wasting my time gazing into something material like that. So I offer myself in complete service unto you. In fact, that woman also married him, and his name was Dhanurdas. And they became, Dhanurdas and his wife became fantastic disciples of Ramanujacharya. There are many stories of Dhanurdas. One quick one. So like this, Madira Ikshana is that the deity can be most enchanting when one properly is guided by the spiritual master. Outside of guidance of spiritual master, one can say a deity is a very beautiful, this thing, that thing, but it doesn't really intoxicate the senses. One will see it from a material perspective. Madira Ikshana means to see the deity from a spiritual perspective. From a material perspective, it's a stone. Generally, people think, I am alive and the deity is a stone. It's the other way around. He is alive and we are stone-hearted. This body, this morning I was hearing Prabhupada saying, this body is dead. You're carrying a dead body with you. You're decorating a dead body. And he called it, what's that verse? Mandanam Lokaranjanam. But it's the phrase that says decorating a dead body. Apranasya Dehasya. He kept saying, oh, you're decorating a dead body. You're decorating a dead body. Because the spirit soul is the one that's alive. The body is dead. And he said the best evidence for that is as soon as the soul leaves, we call it dead. Because already is dead. It's like a car. He gave the example. It's like a car. Just because you sat in the car, comes alive and it can move to places, it doesn't mean that the car is alive. As soon as you're done, you walk out of the car just stands there. It's called parking. It's sitting there all night, all day. Like that. So Ramanujacharya, these two disciples, Dhanurdas and his wife, became such wonderful disciples that some of his brahmacharis and sannyasi disciples became a little envious. But why is Guru Maharaj so merciful to these two? They're, after all, these grahasthas, like that. So Ramanujacharya came to know about this and he wanted to show them that it's not ashram, but it is the dedication to Guru and Krishna, that's what counts. So one night, he asked one of his personal servants to go into the ashram and change things in the ashram. He took one brahmachari's dhoti and mixed it with another brahmachari's dhoti. He took one brahmachari's kopina and mixed it somewhere else. Took one sannyasi's upper cloth and mixed it with another something. So when they woke up, they couldn't find. They said, where's my dhoti? Did you take my dhoti? Did you take my kopi? Did you take my upper cloth? And they started quarreling with each other. That's mine. That is mine. You've taken my cloth. And he didn't say anything. He just let it be. And then he told one of those quarreling people, you go. We'll come up with a plan. I want to see what Dhanurdas does. He said, I will make a plan that we will invite Dhanurdas to come here at night, saying Guru Maharaj has invited you to come. And I'll have a conversation with him. Meanwhile, you others go into his house and steal things from his house. Let's see how he responds to when things get stolen. Oh, yes, yes. We'll show Guru Maharaj is attached to Grahastha. So when the night came, they said, please invite Dhanurdas. They came and said, Guru Maharaj has invited you, and he came. And his wife went to sleep. These brahmacharis, whoever went in, they started stealing from his house. And they saw that she was wearing all this nice jewelry. So she was lying on her side. So they removed her earring, they removed her bangles, they removed her anklets. So she turned. And they said, oh, she's going to wake up. And they ran. And Ramanujacharya told them that when you steal, don't come back, stay outside the window and listen to their conversation. So Dhanurdas came back in the dead of night, saw his wife, that she was only decorated on one half her side, and so he told her, what is this? Did you forget to not put your earrings, bangles in, let's say on the right side? And she said, no. When I was sleeping, Guru Maharaj's some disciples came to steal a few things. I thought maybe they're short of something, maybe they don't have enough money in the ashram. Then they saw my jewelry and they started taking it off. I was happy. Okay, they'll have something. They can sell those jewels and get some money. But I wanted to take them to take the other side as well. So I turned, so it's easy for them to take. But they thought I was waking up and they ran away. Looks like they're in some difficulty. We should be able to give everything to them. So they were very shocked. Oh, their mood is completely on, fixed on service. While we were fighting for, my gamcha, my dhoti, and this is, although we are supposedly renounced, they're more renounced. So they had a newfound respect for Dhanurdas and his wife, like that. So Madhira Ikshana story. Any question? We have time for maybe one question. Yes, so. Question or comment? Okay, we have time for one question. Okay, we'll...
Okay, I have to say that is hearing Haridas Thakur's pastimes.
Yeah.
That how Haridas Thakur, he invited Lord Chaitanya and he put one mat in front of him and let him to sit in front of him. Then his eyes was fixed just like bumblebee collecting the honey from the face of the Lord Chaitanya. Then he left his body at the last moment.
Sure.
So that's
nice. Thank you. Thank you. Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
As mentioned here, when the spiritual master retires from Nirjan Bhajan, and some of the advanced disciples follow him to render personal service to assist him. I had a question. It was obviously connected to the previous purport where Prabhupada talks about how advanced devotees may do nirjan bhajan. Although that we generally hear that in a very deprecating sort of way, oftentimes, but Prabhupada made it very clear yesterday that it is not that it's deprecated for neophyte devotees to try to attempt such things prematurely,
Correct. But
not that it's not something that should be considered by certain devotees of an advanced level. My question is, Prabhupada speaks about this, and I can think of only one other place in the sixth canto, where he wants, please, my disciples, you take up the preaching work, so I can retire and, reside in one spot and just... I know in the sixth canto, in the Daksha Lila...
The purport I read you? The very next one is that one.
Yeah, so...
Because talking of the curse of Narada.
The curse of Narada. So he's asking the disciples to take up the curse so he can render this service. So I was wondering on a... it's like a leadership type of question. Because one doubt that I've often harbored is that I don't know if we always get a chance to see that example being set where leaders are just really just handing it over to the next generation and just getting themselves. I'm not trying to make a comment about leaders,
Yes. But
as a general point, just showing that example to us that at a certain point it's time to let managerial things and such just let it go and get totally absorbed in just hearing and chanting directly about Krishna. to set that example for us, that at a certain stage of our Krishna consciousness,
correct,
that might be something very important to also consider.
Yes. So that good point. There's a phenomenon. The only objection to that phenomenon perhaps is the story of King Anga in the case of Vena. But otherwise you don't see that example. The idea that previous kings or previous leaders could walk into the forest is because they left behind well-trained heirs. So that detachment was easier. We have trained, now they're... One of the things that is, I would say, either lacking or is this is sufficiently... Two things are not happening. Sufficient training, that's one. So I'm not holding the leaders responsible, but it's just there isn't sufficient training, one. And two, there isn't sufficient volunteering to do something like this. The devotees are not volunteering to step up and take responsibility. No, management, not for me. I don't want to. This is not for me. Although they may be by nature, or they have sufficient, I guess, training and let's say purity that is necessary to do this service. I'm not saying that they're pure devotees. They have necessary purity and strength and capacity. They're not volunteering. So both need to happen. For the leaders to step up, step out, the younger generation must be willing to step in, because this is Prabhupada's movement. That is what is my understanding. Maybe it's just one-sided view, but that's my understanding. And the second thing is, on a positive note, there is the devotees in the, I guess, the GBC planning have recognized this. And there is a whole committee called succession planning. There are all these Vaishnavas at a senior level who they have a, I guess, I'm just going to call it a team from across the ISKCON around the world, whose main function is to plan for succession. Who will be the next generation of leaders? Not just GBC, but next generation of leaders. And they could be leading, let's say, Bhakti Vrikshas, they could be leading temple, they could be leading a community, they could be leading just ideas and volunteering to do so. How to nurture them, how to encourage them, what are their doubts and concerns, or, you know, some things that might be there, you know, what happens if. So the society wants to create a structure and environment where this can happen, where even there are young persons, let's say, who want to do something, but they might be like, oh, what happens if, what happens then, what happens then? So these things are taken care of to encourage the next generation of leaders. Because whether one likes it or not, the current generation of leaders, even if they don't want to leave, time's coming. Like next 20 years, we will not see the same leaders. Either that they will retire, or that they will leave their body. But it's a fact. So what's going to happen? Those who are in the younger generation must want to step up and take up responsibility. It's not titles. Now I am such and such. That's not the title. That for Prabhupada's movement, I'm taking this responsibility. Like there's taking responsibility of, let's say, Brahmacharya Ashram, in your case. In my case, it's taking responsibility for a household life and other things. We have taken up these responsibilities, as part of Prabhupada's movement. Otherwise, before that, we didn't even know what Brahmacharya means, right? And it's the environment that Prabhupada has created that we are executing the duties of, for now only, ashram, let's say. It's a responsibility we have taken. And you take that responsibility very seriously, and I take my responsibility very seriously, and likewise others take their responsibilities very seriously. That's from our side. So from the older generation side, you know, they can really do work that is more scriptural than managerial. GBC spends, or the leaders spend most of their time doing what? Solving the mistakes untrained neophytes have done, unfortunately. So it's an existing issue. And it's, I think there is an idea of recognition of it, and some efforts are being made in that direction. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.